Hi, it's Jen. Well, it's that time of the year where, like many of you, some of our team is taking some time off, including our podcast producer. So this week, we're sharing a series we recorded earlier this year called Designing Our World. Now, this was before I joined the show as host, so in this episode, you'll hear NPR's Sarah McCammon. Enjoy.
This is 1A. I'm Sarah McCammon in Washington. Have you ever wondered why things in the world are the way they are? Why women's clothing often doesn't have any pockets? Why grocery stores put candy up by the counters? Why the right 2 seconds of music can make you suddenly want a cheeseburger? When we think of the way things operate, it's tempting to say, well, it's just always been that way. But it hasn't always been that way. These things are designed. And today we're kicking off a week-long series of programs about design called Designing Our World. Throughout the week, we'll talk with folks across several industries who are shaking up the design status quo in fashion, in tech, healthcare, and beyond. We'll explore how our world is designed and what those designs tell us about who the world is, sometimes literally, made for. But first, since we are audiophiles here at 1A, it only makes sense to launch this series by talking about sound design, and more specifically, how businesses use sound to get and keep customers. We'll talk to a sound designer shortly, but first we wanted to test how many Sonic logos you recognize with a game we're calling Name That Brand. We put out a call on Twitter, and 1A listener Madeline King said she was up for the challenge. Hi, Madeline, and welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And tell us where you're from.
I'm originally from Nashville, but I reside in Michigan now.
So as you know, we are talking about sound design and sonic branding today. And first, I want to ask you if you know what a sonic brand is.
I'm going to guess that it has to do kind of with a sound associated with a company or a product or, you know, kind of like advertising maybe.
Very,
sound,
very
a sound
good.
Advertisement.
Yes, yes, you are very much on the right track there, Madeline.
Okay.
A sonic brand is for the ears what a logo is for the eyes, basically. A logo for your ears, you could say. We're going to play you 10 sonic brands, and if you get 5 of them correct, 50%, we will send you a collection of some very cool 1A swag. Sound
oh,
good?
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I love swag.
Cool. So let's do it. Yes, here in Public Radio, we are all about the swag. The first one, you'll have 5 seconds to answer, and we can play it a second time if you like. So here we go.
Oh, HBO.
Good job. You got that one right. All right. On to the next one. Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum. Oh, I know it.
You can almost hear it.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do.
Dun, dun,
Does
dun,
that help
dun,
at all?
I know the jingle, but I can't remember. I can't remember. I'm sorry.
It's the farmer's insurance jingle.
Oh, farmers, that's farmers. Right. Ugh, I'm sorry. I should have known
All
that.
Right, well, you're still at 50-50 right
okay.
now. So let's go on to number 3.
Okay. AT&T?
You got it.
Okay.
Number 4? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
I'm loving it. McDonald's.
Yes, how could we forget? You're doing great, Madeline. Okay,
thank you.
We are almost halfway through here. On to number 5.
Law and Order?
You got it.
Okay.
This is too easy. You were just sailing through this.
I'm surprised quiz. I know these.
Number 6. You've heard this one.
Yeah, it's Apple. MacBook when you turn it on.
I think you've already won, but we'll keep going. Number 7.
Is that Windows?
No.
No, I have no idea.
Want to hear it again?
Yeah. Oh, is that NBC or...
There you go.
Okay.
Number 8.
Intel?
Very good.
All right.
You are like a target customer for these sonic brands.
Yes, I am.
Number 9.
That's Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
associate that one with.
I've been watching a lot of TV since I've been home quarantining.
Yes, haven't we all? We all, I think, are all too familiar with that one right now. And yes. Number 10.
Oh, well, of course.
Please get this one.
That's 1A.
Of course. Madeline, you got what? 9 out of 10?
Yeah,
you did
that's
great.
Good. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That means you won our game, and we will, of course, send you a big bag of 1A swag.
Awesome.
And truth be told, we probably would have done it. Thanks again, Madeline.
All right. Thanks.
Joining us now to tell us more about how and why businesses sound the way they do from his home in Oakland, California, is Steve Keller, the Sonic Strategy Director at Pandora. Hi, Steve, and welcome to 1A.
Hi, Sarah. How are you there in quarantine where you are?
We are doing a socially distanced show right now, and so I hope you're doing well. Were you, not to put you on the spot, but were you playing along with our game?
Yes, I was.
And how did you do, may I ask?
Well, you know, I'm in the business, so I would have had 100%, but Madeline was awesome in listening to as many as she did, being able to get them right.
She was. I was very impressed. And Steve, you know, Madeline did get 9 out of 10 of those right, which does that mean that these brands are doing a pretty good job?
Yes. You know, I obviously that's one of the main things with audio logos is all about what we call brand salience, which is attention and recognition. And so the fact that she was able to get 90% of them is great, particularly for those brands. It's interesting that the one she missed was Farmers. Part of that was because you had removed the singing cue that was also a part of that mnemonic. We are farmers, and so she didn't have that semantic prompt, and that probably played into her not being able to recognize that one as well.
Yeah, and unpack this for us. I mean, what makes an effective Sonic brand?
Well, I think the first thing we need to understand about Sonic Identity is that it's not simply about the assets. So in the exercise, we listen to Sonic logos. But Sonic Identity for a brand could be some other things beyond a logo. It might be a brand theme. It might be a brand voice. Anything sonically that helps create an experience of the brand. And so we think of it less as particular assets and more as an identity system. And that's key to creating these associations and this memory. So it's the piece of music you may hear in a commercial. It may be what you hear when you get put on hold. It could be the navigational sounds that are used in an app. And the more a brand can tie all of these things together, the more it builds that recognition as you hear it again and again in a lot of different situations and very consistently over time. So it's building that system and then having ways to implement it across the entire brand's sonic ecosystem.
Much the same way that you see a visual logo throughout a brand, right?
Exactly. Although it's really interesting to note that in a recent study by Ipsos that in television commercials, 91% of the assets that are used are visual, and only 8% of those assets used are audio. But when they tested the effectiveness in terms of memory and recall, those audio cues outperformed the visual cues by a factor of 3 times. So it's a really underused asset in brands. Brands tend to focus on the visual, and the sound piece is as important, if not more effective.
Do we know why that is, or is that a question for a neuroscientist?
why the brands might choose to concentrate on visuals?
Why the audio is so powerful?
You know, I think, yes, neuroscientists would have something to say about that, but I think just in terms of our own evolution, you know, think about it. Our early ancestors probably heard that thing that was about to eat them before they saw it. And so we've just kind of developed a reflexive reaction to sound that's far faster than our reaction to something that we see. It really kind of stimulates not only emotions, but memory structures. A lot of ancient cultures probably sang their histories long before they wrote them down. Certainly in the womb, sound is one of the earliest senses to develop. And we're actually hearing sound in the environment and the sound of our mother's voice. So it's very natural for us to depend on sound in making sense of the world around us.
And on that note, Jose tweets, "My mom and mother-in-law can't remember if they ate breakfast or if their relatives are alive, but play a commercial jingle and they will hum along and possibly become hungry." He posits the brainstem must control breathing, heart rate, and sound recognition. I don't know about that, but I mean, that goes to the effectiveness of these.
Yes. And, you know, some research has shown some areas in the brain that seem to have evolved to simply respond to music. Certainly there's connections between speech and sound, but they've used sound in a lot of treatments for patients with Alzheimer's, finding that music that's familiar can bring back memories and also positive experiences for people that are listening, and it's become a form of treatment.
And Steve, tell us a little bit more, if you would, about the people behind these sounds. Who is coming up with these sounds? Are they usually composers, people with a lot of musical training?
Well, you know, I think everyone approaches the creation and the design differently. Usually there will be someone, a composer or a sound designer, that's involved in creating the content. And then quite often there are individuals like myself who are involved in kind of bridging this gap between, as I call it, sound science and sound art, understanding the psychology, the research behind sound and the way that it impacts us, and working with composers and designers in interpreting these insights in such a way that we're kind of stacking the sonic deck, if you will, towards memory, recognition, congruence, flexibility, distinctiveness, all the things that we factor into what makes a good sonic identity.
And I want to play a clip from one of our listeners who called in to share her thoughts on this. This is Debbie.
This is Debbie, and a sound that I always recognize immediately and enjoy hearing is the sound of a cup and saucer rattling. I find it very comforting. It reminds me of hot coffee and hot tea and good things. So when I hear it, I know it immediately, and it makes me feel good.
Steve, we've talked a lot about music and tone, but how much are things like sound effects part of this equation?
Well, certainly, as you just heard from that caller, that these sounds themselves are an important part of memory and experience. I grew up in West Virginia in a coal mining town. And so at a very early age, one of the sounds that I remember are the sounds of the trains and the train whistles. And even today, when I hear a train, it doesn't matter where I am, it transports me back to that moment in time. So our life is full of these sounds, and it performs a soundtrack for us. And as the sounds are paired with stimulus, it creates the stimulus response. So a cup and a saucer may make you think about a meal or some ritual in your life. For me, the sound of trains. For other people, it might be the sound of a bell or church bell, other things that might be sonic landmarks, if you will. And they have a way of transporting us to this place and evoking these memories that are really, really powerful.
And Kelly writes on Facebook, "I love jingles, but don't want to hear any of these sounds from my device. I don't understand the purpose of their use. Is it to alert potential customers to the brands when they aren't paying attention to the actual broadcast ads?" Which, Steve, I think she means, she's sort of getting to the difference there between commercial jingles and something like sonic logos. We're talking about a lot of different kinds of sound elements here. What are the differences?
Well, obviously, context is one of the differences. And she's responding to to fatigue she's feeling. And I think this is something that brands need to be aware of. Just because you can fill a sonic space doesn't always mean that you should. You need to be intentional with the application of these sounds. So sometimes, a sound needs to perform a certain function. It needs to work as an alert or a notification. But quite often our devices are built so that you can turn those notifications off or have it vibrate, give you another sensory input. And so, again, the idea is to think about a customer journey and where customers may experience the brand, and to try and craft sonic experiences that will be appealing, that don't produce fatigue over time. And I think, this is a prime example of a place where somebody needs to turn those sounds off when they would like to.
And we were talking earlier about some of the differences and similarities between visual branding, which I think people are maybe more familiar with, and sonic branding. I want to play a quick clip from a movie that's been around since the 1920s. So you probably recognize what that is, Steve.
Right, the MGM lion.
Yeah. And, the visual branding that goes with that sound we just heard, again, it's the MGM lion. Have businesses invested in sound as much as other types of branding, like the visual that you see with that?
No. But that's changing. And part of the reason it's changing is we've entered into a world where now we have smart speakers. We have devices that we're speaking to and we're hearing. So you're not seeing the brand. Often there's not text that's involved. So brands have started to think about, well, how are we recognized in this world where you can't see us on a shelf or you can't see our logo? And so they're on a mission to think about this more, and they're beginning to think about how do we create a strong, distinctive sonic identity, the same way we have a distinctive visual identity. And since we're talking about design, the design principles in developing visual design versus sonic design are really similar. It's a process of understanding everything that you can about the brand, what's the brand personality, values, meaning, purpose, and then how do we translate that into a visual language or a sonic language that ultimately can reflect the brand and build some recognition for it. And you go through a process of prototyping, pulling these things together,
We're
testing them.
We're going to stop you
them.
There, Steve. We'll be right back in just a moment. And coming up, we'll bring in a new voice and get a behind-the-scenes look at the process of creating a sonic logo in 2020.
This message comes from NPR sponsor AT&T. There's a lot that's different about this school year, but one thing that hasn't changed is AT&T's commitment to education. They're focused on keeping students and teachers connected to learning. It's why AT&T has connected over 200 million students with tools and technology for distance learning. Learn more at att.com/remote learning.
At Planet Money, we are also grappling with what's going on in the world.
We just don't know, and you're still going to have to decide.
So we call up economists like Emily Oster.
It's like we're fighting the pandemic by having a bake sale or something.
Exactly.
I mean, all due respect to bake sales.
Exactly.
Listen and subscribe to Planet Money from NPR.
Today, we're talking about sonic logos with Steve Keller. He's the Sonic Strategy Director for Pandora. Sonic logos are the sounds that brands use to get us to notice them. It could be a jingle, or it could be a distinct voice like Siri. When they're working right, the response they inspire can be positively Pavlovian. We asked you to share which ones stick in your head the most, and here's what Isabel and Brian left in our inbox.
The first thing that came to my mind was McDonald's. I'm loving it. Ba 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 ba.
I'm loving it.
One that really resonates with me is the Chips Ahoy with the jazz music.
Chips Ahoy's got it all. Nabisco.
As well as We Are Farmers.
Bum, 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 bum.
And then, of course, the classic from NPR. Bum 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 bum.
And also another one is the 588-2300 Empire Today. That dumb song, it gets stuck in my head every time for that Empire Carpet Company or whatever.
Thanks for those messages. We wanted to go behind the scenes to look at what it takes for a company to develop that signature sound. And joining us now to tell that story from his home in Cincinnati, Ohio, is Raja Rajamannar. He's the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer at MasterCard. Hi, Raja. Welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much for having me, Sarah.
And also with us is Steve Keller. We've been talking with Steve, the Sonic Strategy Director at Pandora. Steve, I want to go back to you quickly. If you want to finish your thought from a few minutes ago, we had been talking about the MGM logo with the famous roaring lion, which, of course, also has a distinctive sound that people are familiar with. And you were talking about sort of the differences between visual and sonic branding.
Yes, and you know, I think the point that I was making before the break was that the design principles are very similar. It's just the output is different. So, you know, we're really kind of thinking about how are we expressing the brand. And with the MGM logo that you had played, you know, we're able to recognize it even though we're not seeing it. And part of that was because I think they used the visual and the sound together, paired long enough that we were able to, you know, recognize it. And now we can pull the visual away from it. Very similar to Intel's audio logo. Now we don't need to see Intel. We hear the bump, 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 and we know it's Intel.
And Steve, before we go any further, I have to ask, we heard a moment ago Brian saying he hates the Empire Carpet jingle. He called it that dumb song, but it's clearly stuck in his head.
Yes.
So does it matter whether people say they like or dislike a Sonic brand as long as they remember it?
Well, I mean, certainly appeal is a really important metric. And so every brand would want people to remember it. I think what the caller was responding to is something we call an earworm, which can happen not just with jingles, but with any song, where it gets stuck in your head and you can't seem to get rid of it. So that's a problem that every brand wants to have, but ideally you want that to be a pleasant experience.
Now, I want to talk about another aspect of this, and this is gender. Voices are a recognizable element of audio branding, obviously. And the ones that tend to tell you to do things, like buy insurance, are often men.
Are you in good hands?
Whereas the ones that do things for you tend to be women.
Sorry, I didn't quite get that.
I wonder if you can both talk a little bit more about that. Is there a danger here of reinforcing gender stereotypes, especially as the popularity of these smart speakers like Alexa grows? You know, 1 in 3 homes have them right now. Raja, I want to give that question to you.
Okay. So first and foremost, I think, unfortunately, the gender stereotyping has been happening in marketing for decades, right? And whether it is in traditional advertisements or even in these latest voice-based devices, you see there is a segregation, and you say these are the kind of situations where you want to use a male voice, and these are the situations you want to use a female voice. That's more perpetuating an existing stereotype, but there is very little psychological research out there to show that if men order, you will buy, and woman is there only to serve you. That kind of a thing is more a myth that's being perpetuated and wrongly acted upon in my mind. Because either a man or a woman can be equally effective in every situation if they have the right kind of voice, the tone, the modality, and the passion comes through, the feeling comes through appropriately. So it has really nothing to do directly with the gender. The only exception I would say is for children. When you listen to a small person's voice, it's a lot more endearing, and you as an audience would become less defensive and more receptive to those kind of sounds, because that's how the nurturing instinct sort of kicks in. But other than that, in terms of very young children versus the regular adults, there is not much of a difference.
And Steve, as you work with companies designing their sonic brands, how do you think about these issues of gender stereotyping, maybe racial stereotyping? How do you advise them?
Well, I think that you know, stereotyping is the key element there. I mean, we do know from research that people tend to respond to female voiceovers or announcers much more positively than male. I think you know, to take what Raja has said a little further. It's true, particularly in advertising, there are these kind of systemic biases that are created in terms of, well, you're selling this product, it needs to be a male versus female, or it needs to, you know, you need comfort, so that needs to be a woman. I think those are the stereotype pieces. I think that there certainly is some research around effectiveness and the way that we listen, and we can tie that back probably to, you know, being within our mother's womb, hearing a mother's voice, which is, you know, children recognize that mother's voice much faster than a father's voice. So there are things that we can learn from there. But I think when we get into relegating stereotypical roles, it's a personal assistant, therefore it needs to be female, I think that's where we get into dangerous territory with the stereotypes. And that's moving beyond effectiveness and the context and the tone that Roger was talking about, and moving towards a gender role that's being perpetuated with a voice.
All right, well, we have to take a break. Stay close. This is 1A.
. 2020 had a lot of us rethinking our lives. 2021, LifeKit wants to help you make those changes, whether they're big or small. All this January, LifeKit will give you smart tips to think through your next decision. Listen now to the LifeKit podcast from NPR.
Raja, I want to ask you about something that MasterCard's done, because you're the chief marketing and communications officer there, of course. MasterCard was ranked 2 weeks ago the best audio brand of 2020 in a yearly ranking released by the sonic branding agency AMP. It jumped to first from position 72 back in 2019, and that's because you debuted this last year. New sound logo, just 6 notes, and first of all, congratulations on your success. What did it take to create that?
Thank you very much, Sarah. So firstly, what I would like to clarify, it is not just a brand logo in an audio form that we have been doing. Many brands have been doing it, and when we wanted to manifest our brand in an audio sense, we wanted to really look at what other brands are doing, and is there something that we can emulate? And we were pretty shocked and appalled that actually there is not a single brand that we could come across which had a comprehensive end-to-end sonic architecture, which means it is not just the logo. Just like in the visual situation, you have a logo, you have got a design system, you have got a whole series of guidelines that you have. And whereas sonic seems to be very unidimensional depending on that particular company. So what we have done is really come up with a very comprehensive end-to-end sonic architecture, which starts with, for example, a 30-second melody that's A, pleasant, B, it is neutral because it has to fit in across all situations without dominating. It has to be memorable. It has to be hummable. It has to be adaptable to different cultures, different situations, and different genres. So when we came up with all these, it was a 30-second melody. Believe it or not, it took us 2 full years to come up with the melody that was working across all the parameters that we were looking at. Now, that is something which we use behind all our advertisements as a background, or in music on hold, or it is dial tones, etc. Now then, we have got a 3-second subset of that 30 seconds, which is what the Sonic logo, we refer to it as Sonic Signature, with which you end your ads, and that's exactly what you played. The third one we have, which is probably also a significant differentiator for MasterCard, is each time your MasterCard transaction goes through successfully, you're waiting some kind of a confirmation. That sound, which is just 1.3 seconds, is what we call it as the acceptance sound of MasterCard.
And we've got a little
1.3 seconds.
We've got a little clip of that, Raja, if you don't mind. Let's go ahead and play that. This is what you hear when you pay with MasterCard. And we'll play the original quickly again just to compare. Okay, so you've got a lot of different versions of this, right?
Correct. So, for example, we don't want to play the same sound if you are in Tiffany's versus if you are at McDonald's. We want very different situations based, very different sounds based on the situations. And the whole idea is every layer of our architecture has to be tying up to the next one so that they keep reinforcing depending on which situation you are in. You're always coming to the sound of MasterCard. So we created what we call as a sonic DNA. And now it is sort of really spreading quite nicely. For example, 36 million outlets around the world today already have got the MasterCard sound as the acceptance sound out there. So that's what really has moved us up in terms of our ratings. And of course, it's very gratifying to us when our peers recognize us. And now we are being put at number one. But right. It'll take a while to really be universally recognized.
And Raja, why did you decide it was so important to invest time and money in having an audio identity for your brand?
So I think, firstly, to what Steve has earlier mentioned, the number of situations where you are only going to use voice or sound is dramatically increasing. Now, 10% of all the households in the US have got a smart speaker. There is no visual real estate where I can showcase my brand when a consumer is interacting with that speaker. It has to be sound-based. That's just one example. The Internet of Things, the connected cars, the autonomous vehicles, a lot of situations are coming down the pike which do not have a visual real estate where I can showcase my brand. And you don't want to be disintermediated or go into oblivion in the non-visual real estate situations where there is only sound. So it was high time that we as a brand had to manifest our brand in an audio form, but in a very thoughtful and a strategic fashion, which is what we are doing.
Is this a trend, Steve? Are you seeing more companies pay more attention to this?
Certainly. We're seeing more and more companies that are interested in this. The conversations are increasing. But again, old habits die hard. This isn't just a tactical element. It really is about strategy. So the key is for companies to develop sonic strategies and not simply identities.
Now, we've just got a few minutes left, but I want to talk about sort of a cliche that's arisen among commercials in the era of coronavirus. It sounds like this. And those are commercials from Grubhub, Publix, Fairway Stores, Remax, and Samsung. They were compiled by YouTube user Microsoft Sam in a video called, rather appropriately, "Every COVID-19 Commercial is Exactly the Same." The companies mention these uncertain, unprecedented times. They tell us that they're here for us. We're all in this together. Why are all these companies using similar sounding music, Steve?
Well, you know, the sounds of comfort, if you will, that piano, the tempo, the legato, the way that the notes are connected, all evoke a sense of comfort, of warmth, of being taken care of. I think what's problematic is that so many brands are trying to, you know, change their messaging this way. Someone commented to me the other day, wow, I never realized that there are so many brands that care about me. because how many brands have we not heard from and all of a sudden our inboxes are full of in this time of crisis? So I think there's a sensitivity. Brands need to continually walk the talk instead of just changing their voice to suit a moment, because that can be really off-putting.
And just in like 30 seconds or so, Raja, is that something you worry about at MasterCard, repetitiveness at all?
No, I have to definitely be concerned about the repetitiveness that is prevailing and not to fall into the same trap. So absolutely, we are very acutely aware of it and conscious of it.
That's Raja Rajamannar, Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for MasterCard, and Steve Keller, Sonic Strategy Director at Pandora. Thanks so much to you both. Today's producers were Avery Kleinman and Paige Osborne. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. And I'm Sarah McCammon. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.